abolish the law of rest, take it away from the working people, and leave corporations and saloon and keepers and everybody at perfect liberty to destroy that 24 hours of rest, and lawgivers and lawmakers will find out whether or not the people want it, and whether they want those lawmakers.
There are plenty of ways to help the working man without establishing a religious monopoly and enforcing religious observance upon all. There is another point that comes in right here. Those who are asking for the law and those who work for it are those who compel the people to work on Sunday. In the Illinois State Sunday Convention in Chicago last month, it was stated in the first speech made in the convention, quote, "We remember how that the working men are compelled to desecrate the Sabbath by the great corporations." The very next sentence was, quote, "We remember also that the stockholders, the owners of these railroads, are members of the churches, that they sit in the pews and bow their heads in the house of God on the Sabbath day." End quote.
That is only saying that there are hypocrites in this world. What has that to do with this proposed law?
I am coming to that. It has a good deal to do with it. The stockholders who own the railroads act in this way, those men said. And it was stated by a minister in that convention that the railroad president told him that there were more petitions for Sunday trains from preachers than from any other class.
There are a lot of hypocrites among the preachers then.
Precisely. Although you yourself have said it, I confess I have not the heart to dispute it.
I do not find any fault with that statement. If it is true, it does not touch this question.
If these preachers and church members will not keep the Sabbath in obedience to what they say is the commandment of God, will they keep it in obedience to the command of the state?
Certainly the hard-working man needs rest. The preachers, church members, and millionaires may do as they please. The bill comes in here and says that the national government, taking part of the jurisdiction of the civil government of the United States by a concession made by the states, by virtue of its control of interstate commerce, and the post office business, and the army and navy, will take advantage of what the states have given to the general government in the way of jurisdiction, and will not introduce practices which destroy the Sabbath in the states. That is the object of this legislation. That is all that is undertaken here. It is simply an act proposing to make efficient the Sunday rest laws of the state, and nothing else.
But those laws are to be enforced, if at all, by those who are so strongly in favor of them.
No, by the state. If these people were in favor of them, or not in favor of them, or violated them, that is another thing. A man may be for a law which he violates. A great many of the strongest temperance people in the world use intoxicating liquors. They say that they realize the evil, and that they are in favor of the enactment of law which will extirpate those evils. The strongest advocates I have ever seen of temperance legislation are men who have come to realize that the grave is just ahead of them. They cannot get rid of the appetite, but they pray the government for legislation that will save the boys.
That is all right. I am in favor of prohibition straight, but not Sunday prohibition.
You cannot adduce a man's practice as a reply to the argument on a question that touches the public good. It does not vitiate a man's principle because he fails to live up to it himself.
But the secret of the whole matter is this: as an argument for the Sunday law, these men assert that the great railroad corporations desecrate the Sabbath, and by persistently running Sunday trains, also compel the railroad men to work and to desecrate the day. They at the same time assert that the men who own the railroads belong to the churches. If then, the railroads compel their men to desecrate the day, and the owners of the railroads are church members, then who is it but the church members that are compelling people to desecrate the day? Further than this, they quoted at Chicago the statement of a railroad president, that the roads get more requests for Sunday trains signed by preachers than they do from other people. But as the church members own the railroads, and the preachers request them to run Sunday trains, then who is to blame for the desecration of the day but the preachers and their own church members? Can't the preachers stop asking for Sunday trains without being compelled to do so by the civil law? In the Chicago Convention last month, November 20th and 21, Dr. Knowles, who is secretary of this National Sunday Law Union, said that by the influence of William E. Dodge, even after his death, the Delaware and Lackawanna Railroad Company had resisted the temptation to run trains on Sunday until the present year. But 500 ministers met in conference in New York and used competing lines on Sunday, and by this the hands of the Sunday Observance Committee have been tied ever since. After that, when the Delaware and Lackawanna directors were asked not to run Sunday trains, they replied, "How can you come to us pleading for us to run no trains on Sunday, when your preachers by the hundreds on Sunday use our rival lines, which do run on Sunday? If your preachers ride on Sunday trains on other roads, we cannot see why they and other people cannot ride on our trains on Sunday. And if it is all right for these other roads to run trains on Sunday, and certainly ministers of the gospel would not ride on them if it were wrong, then we cannot see how it can be such a great wrong for us to run Sunday trains." End quote. That is a very proper answer. No wonder the Sunday committee's hands are tied by it. And yet that very conference of 500 preachers, assembled in New York last summer, took the first decided step toward the organization of the National Sunday Association, of which Dr. Knowles himself is secretary. By these facts there is presented the following condition of things. 1. Church members own the railroads. 2. Preachers sign requests for Sunday trains. 3. The church members grant the request of the preachers for Sunday trains, and the preachers ride on the Sunday trains, and other church members go on Sunday excursions. 4. Then the whole company, preachers and church members, together petition Congress and the state legislatures to make a law stopping all Sunday trains. That is to say, they want the legislatures, state and national, to compel their own railroad-owning church members not to grant the request of the preachers for Sunday trains. In other words, they want the civil power to compel them all, preachers and church members, to act as they all say that Christians ought to act. And they insist upon quoting all the time the commandment of God, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." But if they will not obey the commandment of God, which they themselves acknowledge and quote, what assurance have we that they will obey the law of Congress or state legislature when they get it, especially as it will rest entirely with themselves to see that the law is enforced? Will they compel themselves by civil law to do what they themselves will not otherwise do? The sum of this whole matter is that they want the civil power to enforce church discipline, and that not only upon themselves, but upon everybody else. The whole system, and all the pretensions upon which this Sunday law is demanded, are crooked. As to the enforcement of the law, it will fault those who are working to get it, because certainly those who do not want it will not enforce it, and the officers of the law are not given to the enforcement of laws which are not supported by public opinion. This is proved by the fact that the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago now have Sunday laws that ought to satisfy any reasonable person, and yet not one of them is enforced. And the preachers of that city and state, instead of seeing that these are enforced, call convention after convention to work up more Sunday laws, both state and national. What then is the next intention? It is to make it a political question in both state and nation, and make the enactment and enforcement of Sunday laws the price of votes and political support. This is proved by the following resolutions adopted by the Elgin Sunday Law Convention. Quote, "Resolved, that we look with shame and sorrow on the non-observance of the Sabbath by many Christian people, in that the custom prevails with them of purchasing Sabbath newspapers, engaging in and patronizing Sabbath business and travel, and in many instances giving themselves to pleasure and self-indulgence, setting aside by neglect and indifference the great duties and privileges which God's day brings them. Resolved, that we give our votes and support to those candidates, or political officers, who will pledge themselves to vote for the enactment and enforcing of statutes in favor of the civil Sabbath." End quote.